and welcome to ESPN's The Far Post podcast. We are back for another week. What a fun round of dub we have just witnessed. We absolutely can't wait to get stuck into all the chat about it. But before we do, we want to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands we're recording on today, the Wurundjeri people, and pay our respects to their elders past and present. For today, you've got me, Marissa Lordanik, Angela Christian Wilkes, and Anna Harrington. So, my dudes, let's begin today's episode with some you love to see it. And really, truly, there were so many things to love in this round of dub. Harrow, do you want to kick us off with a you love to see it?
I'd love to. We talk about the Sydney FC Death Star who rolled on and now top of the table with a game to spare. So that just seems inevitable. But that wasn't what we loved to see. What we loved to see was their star, Courtney Vine, absolutely back to her best. She scored 2 goals. She had an assist. But the one I really loved to see was her first goal because it was just so well taken. The corner, Mackenzie Hawksby takes it. Clearly a set play here as well. And you don't love to see Wellington's defence here because they've not picked the Vine run out deep. But first time, gets the squaring ball from, or the cutback corner from Mackenzie Hawksby and just drills it first time into the bottom corner. Just made it look so easy, like effortless. I'm sure the ball is travelling at a fair old pace, but when you're watching it like on the screen, it just looks like it's gliding into that bottom corner. Brilliantly taken. And yeah, Courtney Vine, we know she's had a rough run with hamstring injuries and she was out of the Matilda squad for personal reasons. But over the last couple of weeks, she's just started to hit her straps again and remind us all that when she is on, she's arguably the best player in the comp, right? So yeah, Courtney Vine's wonderful first goal. You love to see it.
Absolutely, we did. And as you said, Wellington will not love to watch that back in their sessions during this week because she could not have been in any more space. But Angela, what did you love to see from this week?
I think we've got a bit of a bangers theme for you love to see it this week. And I love to see Lauren Allen's goal in Newcastle's away game against Western United. They won 3-1. This was the first fixture at Stade de Tarnay out in the western suburbs. And Western won't be happy because Newcastle came away with the win and christened the stadium that way. But yeah, Allen's goal, it was like a fantastic finish from long range. But the thing that made me laugh about it, she was great in this game and she had a secondary assist earlier on. But at that moment in time, Serena Bolden had the ball, was kind of holding on to it. It was a bit of a shabby turnover. And the whole time, Lauren Allen had kind of like been pointing to her feet. And I think it's like one of those ones where it's like, like she knew what she was going to do. And it just like happened by accident that she ended up with the ball at her feet and she absolutely laced it and put it into the top right corner. And it was fantastic finish. And yeah, just a really fun game from Newcastle. I feel like this season they've been a little bit inconsistent, but when they have been scoring goals, they've always done it with such flair and fun. So yeah, Lauren Allen scoring for the Jets. You love to see it.
Absolutely love to see it. They were having the most fun down in Tarnate. For me, to complete the banger file, basically, Sophie Harding's goal for Western Sydney's 1-0 win over Perth, it was just beautiful. Like, Danica Matos put, like, the assist was quite good as well. Like, perfectly weighted ball to Sophie Harding. She takes the touch, and then she just kind of I don't know what the correct term for what she does here is, but it's beautiful. It's curling. It just loops over poor Morgan Aquino in the Perth goal. And she looks kind of shocked by it, which is always a really fun one when there's a banger scored. But honestly, it was an absolute joy to watch. Got to give some quick honourable mentions as well, though, because like we said, it was a banger-filled round of goals. The honourable mention has to go to Rolla Badawiya from Central Coast Mariners because the Mariners had a very good day out in their 4-1 victory over Canberra. Rolla Badawiya knows how to score, knows how to celebrate, but we'll get to that later. We'll stick with the Mariners though to kind of get today's chat started because like I said, 4-1 winners over Canberra. Not good for Canberra, really, really good for the Mariners. They have now officially confirmed finals in their first season back, which is absolutely awesome. We haven't spoken a lot about them other than to say they seem to be coasting along quite nicely. Everything seems to be going well for them. But now that they are officially locked in, what do we like about the Mariners and why do they keep winning? What is so good about this team?
Just flying under the radar beautifully, aren't they? Like, right, you're talking about your Sydneys and your Melbourne teams in particular, and they've snuck up to fourth because they just keep, as you say, they just keep winning, they just keep getting results. Seems like a very happy place up on the coast. They've, I think, really nailed the balance, maybe in some ways similar to Western United last year, except for their internationals are sticking around the whole time, right? It does seem like it's a really nice balance, and they've hit their straps in terms of their attack. The patient approach to Kai Simon has really worked for them. They built her in initially as a substitute, and now she is starting games. Rolla Butterworth kept scoring. I think she had a couple of flat patches early in the season, but she's really good. And Ergamal's just been fantastic, hasn't she? Like, as far as international recruits go, I think she probably exceeded expectations. You would have had, you know, some expectations that she could do well, given, you know, she's an international footballer, but been sensational. Some of her goals have been wonderful. Her touch, she's smart. She's got the smarts to sort of bamboozle defences, and they've managed to get all three of them into the same attack and working really nicely. I think Simon had a couple of assists as well yesterday, as well as winning the penalty she scored. So they are just hitting their straps nice. And remember, they also lost their captain, Taryn King, to an ACL. So, and she was one of their starting centre-backs too. So yeah, they've recovered really nicely. So it's a credit to what Emily Husband and her team are doing there. Casey Dumont, obviously in goal, would shore off a few things up there too. Yeah, it just seems like a pretty happy place. I think when you see those sorts of celebrations, you're not pulling those out if you're not genuinely enjoying playing together. And I know that's all easier when you're winning, but the way that they're playing as well is making results easier to come by.
Yeah, I think, and just across the season, I've talked about this before, but they always seem to have a very like clear and consistent game plan and style of play. And I think having all of those options up front has really worked to their benefit. Like, they haven't necessarily thumped a lot of teams, but they've always been able to get goals. Well, not always, but almost all of the time when they've needed to get goals or just get a comfortable scoreline under their belt, they've been able to do that. And I think a lot of that does come back to like coaching and game management, and when they've, like, you know, from Emily Husband, like, deciding when they're going to pull that trigger and when they're going to like play a particular way and going behind and that kind of thing. So I'm not very good at articulating tactics, but I know that I've kind of seen it happen, and it's yeah, it's been quite enjoyable. They're also like quite a physical side, but not in a kind of reckless way. They're always just, I think, quite determined for, and when opposition teams come up against them, they don't like, there is, I guess, a strong core of experienced and mature players there that can kind of uphold that type of play as well. So yeah, it's been they're just very consistent, and I mean, good for them. I think all credit to Emily Husband and what she's done there as well with this side. I think as well, like I was saying about Jets, it's been enjoyable to see the quality of players like Ergamal, Badawiya, even like Trimis has had a couple of goals. They've got like a lot of different options, which perhaps when we look at a team like City, obviously it's not a completely perfect comparison there, but they've got a lot of outlets, and I think that's really been beneficial for them across the season. So yeah, I don't know, good for the Mariners. Did you want to touch on the celebrations, Marissa, because I still don't know if I've completely comprehended what happened.
I feel we have to talk about them because they were simply so good. We had a question about them. one of our listeners dubbed them silly geese, but I assume that was meant very affectionately and very positively because it was silly geese behaviour. I think it was after both Badawiya goals they really went to town. So we had the rowing celebration where they all sat down at the corner flag, lined up one behind the other, and just started rowing an imaginary boat gently downstream. And they looked like they were having the absolute time of their lives. And it was very, very funny. And then Badawiya, for her second goal, pulls off the shoe, dials a number, makes a call. Very get smart, which I found funny. But yeah, I think it really speaks to Harrow's point about just like, they seem like they're having a ball. Like, they just look like they're having fun. And we know from chats about lots of teams in lots of leagues, even international football, like if a team looks like they're having fun, there's a very good chance they're going to play good football as well. And the Mariners are very much the kind of embodiment of that thought process. So it's absolutely awesome to see. Ergamal, I think, is an absolute perfect case study in getting your international signings right because they really do make or break your season in a league like the Dub. So it's an absolute credit to whoever scouted her, whoever plucked her from Asia. I don't even know where she was playing before the Dub, which is my bad, but however she was scouted, congratulations to them because they've found an absolute gem. And it really is just a credit to the Mariners that they were able to find a player like that and make sure that she settled in quite quickly. Like, I don't ever remember there being a teething period, I suppose, for her. Like, she seemed to just get in and work. And I suppose the kind of comparison is someone like Millie Farrow at Perth, who we saw was obviously talented, had so many chances early on, had that really, really strong spell where we were all like, the damn walls have burst, this is going to be great, Perth are going to be great, and then it kind of slowly sort of petered off again, where Ergamal has been maybe a lot more consistent over the course of what is a longer season now. So it's really, really awesome. Also, I'm glad you mentioned Peter Trimis because I low-key forgot that she is a Mariners player. We've all been watching her for the Young Matildas at the Asian Cup where they finished third, which is awesome. So the fact that she is now coming back into this Mariners team as they head into finals is just another positive. So there's lots of things to like about this Mariners side. The flip side, obviously, is that the Canberra team that they came up against conceded four goals in one half. It's just been a really rough season for Canberra. We had a couple of questions about, you know, obviously last week Sam told us all about what's happening off the field in Canberra. There's been lots of reports about the men's expansion and what that means for the women's side and all of that. We had questions, do you think all of that has impacted this Canberra side? Do we think that regardless of the off-field stuff, is it time for maybe a change of coach at Canberra? How are we feeling about Canberra United?
Me? I'm depressed. I don't know. These past two games, like, I don't, just like very kind of disappointing. I suppose it's been an emotional time following Canberra United this season because there have been, I think, around that New Year's, January, early start of the year, there were a couple of results that just like really stung in terms of like conceding a goal in the last moments of the game. We saw that last week with the draw that they got, but then to get like these two pretty hefty losses in one week, it's, you know, you're kind of hoping as a fan that they can put it all out there for the last few rounds of the season and get some wins for pride and to kind of prove a point. But yeah, it's hard to not link it to what's going on behind the scenes at Canberra. And in terms of like coaching staff, to the best of my understanding, like Negos Popovic and his team are really well liked by this Canberra group, and that's not really where a lot of the tension is coming from. If anything, they're probably caught up in it as well in terms of like, you know, what they're doing all the chat around contracts and stability and management, like they're obviously going to be a big part of that and not really, for lack of a better word, be victims alongside the players of that situation. I think maybe it, in terms of like coaching changes, if they were to change the coach, I don't think it would fix the, what we're seeing in terms of Canberra this season. I think there needs to be proper development in supporting their young players and a bit more of like a visible game plan from a top down view and to see them kind of, because they've got great young players who you kind of look at and you think that player would be cooking next season, or that player just needs a bit more time, but they haven't actually been afforded the luxury or had the depth in their squad. And a lot of that comes back to like, what are they able to do to lure in good players and have a kind of cohesive squad. Like, again, we're talking about Mariners. There's clearly been a lot of thought given to how that squad has come together and how those players complement each other and the kind of balance of depth versus youth and imports and that kind of thing. And I don't necessarily feel like Nagosh and his team have been afforded that, the same kind of resourcing to do that. I don't know. That's just my gut feeling. I'm kind of talking out my ass a little bit here, but I don't think that, you know, putting in a new coach is going to fix the, it's not going to fix the behind the scenes problem. It's kind of, I don't know, maybe there's a case or an argument for kind of what we saw at Victory many, many years ago when Jeff Hopkins came in. Hara, I remember you saying that first season when Jeff came in, it was about stopping the rot. So like, you come into a situation that's not ideal, but you kind of just have to start building back. But that, again, is like the first step in a longer plan. And I just don't think we've seen that from Canberra the past few seasons. It's just been season to season. Let's just see what happens. And I think we're definitely seeing the effects of that again this season. They haven't been doing good as a team and as a club for a while now. And so it's just like, I think that's also part of it. It's not just a bad season. It's like a bad season in a run of quite disappointing seasons where you can see the potential that some of the players have, well, like the playing group has, but just don't see kind of the payoff long-term. Anyway, that's, wow, a lot of feelings about it, Angela. But yeah, it's just, it's frustrating. You want good things for Canberra United and you want good things for the players at Canberra United. So that's also part of it. Yeah, Harrow, did you have any vibes?
I think you summed it up really well. And yeah, I think with the limitations that Nagosh has been working under as well, I don't envy it. I think that's just the ongoing situation with Canberra. Like, yeah, what are you meant to do? And as we said sort of last week, Sam alluded to it and we saw Michelle Heyman's comments to the Canberra Times, like, if you're going to sort it out, you want to sort it out quickly because it's going to cost you players. I mean, if I'm brutally honest, if you're Vesna Milivojevic, why would you stay there? Surely plenty of more high-profile teams, maybe a Western Sydney or a Melbourne City or whoever, would throw some cash at her. She's one of the best players in the league. Why would you stick around? Michelle Heyman obviously has that love for Canberra. Your Nikki Flannery has been another, you know, Christopherson. There's been some really exciting players. A Chloe Lincoln is such a highly rated goalkeeper. Like, there is some talent there, but like, for one thing, it's, you got to try and keep that talent in Canberra when a lot of, you know, girls aren't necessarily from there. You know, we see a Claire Hunt went to Western Sydney and took off. Would other players look to make the same decision? Wouldn't surprise me. Like, we've seen it with Jess Nash before as well, right? You're going to lose your players, and then, yes, the talent will keep coming, but you've got to nurture it, otherwise it won't stick around. And it's, is it a bit of, yeah, too little too late if change does happen? Maybe. Like, you know, if you're going to promise, say, change or improvements to these players, you've got to actually make it happen straight away, right? Like, because plenty of them, I'm sure, have probably already lost patience and will have to think about what they want to do next. I've got no doubt there'll be some players that are playing there because they want to be at home or they enjoy playing there. And, you know, there's some quality players there, but it's a professional, or it should be, you know, getting closer and closer to a professional league now, right? So yeah, it's sad because it is, as you sort of alluded to there, Andrew, it's a proud club. It's got a great history. Some fantastic players, and when they play really well, it's great to watch and they can get good crowds. But, yeah, it's just sad, really. And it's, I think it's frustrating. I imagine it is, especially for fans, when you look forward in Canberra playing Sydney and all you can think about is, geez, that could get ugly, right? Yeah, it's a real shame. So,
and I think this time last season, if I'm remembering correctly, Canberra had a bit of a bounce because it got a little bit chaotic towards the end of last season because there were teams that just literally their motivation was like, let's just be chaotic and see if we can muck around other teams' plans for the next, you know, for finals and that kind of thing. So I'm holding out for that potentially from Canberra, from to just like kind of for the fans to like just get some wins under the belt and get a bit of good energy to close out the season. But again, that's also like they shouldn't. If they don't do that, that's also fine. It's understandable, you know, that if they want, yeah. If the vibes are not good for the rest of the season, that will also be understandable is what I'm saying there. So, yeah, fingers crossed, but not feeling hopeful in the grand scheme of things with Canberra United at the moment.
Which sucks. It just absolutely sucks. And as I said last week, we will continue to kind of watch and wait and see what happens with Canberra and all of this off-field stuff because it needs to reach a head soon. So obviously when that happens, we will talk about it. But moving on from one disappointing season to a couple of other disappointing seasons, we had some more results which kind of all but ended other teams' seasons. So we had the Wanderers picking up a 1-0 win over Perth and Sydney, as we mentioned, being their Death Star selves with the 4-2 win over Wellington. We're not going to talk about the two Sydney teams who won, though. We're going to talk a little bit about their opponents because friend of the pod, Tom, put a question in our group chat and was like, Wellington and Perth, there were such high hopes. I vividly remember us talking so highly of them. Pardon me. At the start of the season. And then Tom basically put it in the group chat and was like, who's been more disappointing, Wellington or Perth? So I'm going to just blatantly steal Tom's question. Who has been more disappointing this season, Wellington or Perth?
Perth.
You go, Angela.
You go first. Oh,
okay.
Thanks. All right, I'll go first. I'm wearing purple. Yeah, why not? I think just because for me, as a, you know, someone who doesn't support, well, I'm quite fond of the Phoenix, but someone who doesn't support either Perth or Wellington, I think just it's been more disappointing because Perth have been more disappointing because they've been less interesting to watch compared to the Knicks, kind of this second part of the season. And for the Knicks, I still feel like they, like the game that they played on the weekend, there were still moments like, they were energetic in the first half of the first half against Sydney. They had some really exciting moments. They still do have, they're still able to score bangers. They got a win last week. Like there's still something going on. And I think I was disappointed initially because I really wanted every season with the Knicks. I'm like, this is your season, babe. It's this season, you're going to do it. And then it doesn't really work out, but I still think there's been a commitment to good football. Whereas with Perth, I just don't look forward to watching them in the same way that I do with the Knicks. And I'm sorry if that's kind of rude, but yeah, it's just, I don't know. And for Perth as well, I guess there are some questions about, for the Knicks, they've kind of, in this kind of discussion, at least they do sort of, for lack of a better word, have the excuse that they haven't had a long-term coach in place. There's been a lot of coaching changes for the side. They're also a new club. Whereas for Perth, Alex Aparkas has been with Perth for quite a while now. And I think everyone was kind of holding out for like, you know, this is the season where this long-term project, kind of like the inverse of Canberra. It's like, there has been a project in place. We can see what they've been aiming to do. We can see the players they've been developing, but it hasn't really come to fruition. And that's I don't know. Does that make it more disappointing? I don't know. But in terms of the season itself, I'm more disappointed with, I think, Perth. Or Perth has been more disappointing. Me saying I'm more disappointed with makes me sound like I'm their auntie or something. And it's like, they don't care about what I have to think about them. Anyway, Harrow, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I'm with you. I felt like this was the season where Perth really needed to kick on to 16 finals. They should have been right in the thick of things, especially given their red hot start to the year, and they've just fallen off a cliff. There's enough talent there for them to be in the finals mix. But mostly you're seeing players like Jale and Dalton coming off the bench. They're not really getting bang for buck. The scoring has just dropped right off. I think maybe they just got found out and the individual quality isn't necessarily hauling them over the line. But yeah, as I said, there is quite a lot of quality there. I mean, it would have been a great position if they could have kept a Hinson from last season, who I think maybe did paper over some cracks for them, because she could just score bangers and pull goals out at really timely moments. And in a few games this year, Hannah Lowry has been able to do that. I think of that victory game where she snatched some points. There's been near Olympicos and stuff like that as well. They've managed to pull a few games out of the fire, but yeah, they've not really kicked on. I think that would be really disappointing for Alex Parks, because it does feel like he got given the keys to do what he wanted with this team. He attracted a lot of players from interstate, especially from New South Wales. They've got players like, quality. Anton Rigby, in particular in defence, are really strong defenders. There's midfield quality. Larrys and Fonsenkamps have dropped off a little bit. But yeah, it's really disappointing. I thought they would actually go on and do something, and they really haven't. It feels like they haven't fired a shot in months, right? I think it's disappointing, and it's probably the way they've tailed off is going to probably cost them a spot in finals. And yeah, as we know, as I sort of allude to with Canberra, how many players stick around for a third year or a fourth year? It's a shame.
It is a shame, and you're very much right about them not firing a shot. It feels like ages since they've won a game. It hasn't been a very strong, I don't even know if you can say second half, because it did feel even kind of after that initial chunk of season, things just didn't really click. But I liked your point.
They haven't won this year, Marissa.
I was trying to remember the stat off the top of my head.
December 31 was the last time they won. So it's been more than 2 months. It's been 2.5 months.
I was going to say, yeah, we are well into March now. That's not good. You can't be doing that, basically, when you kind of had finals ambitions, and like not in a lofty sense, in a very like concrete sort of way at the start of the season. It's definitely not good. But I liked your point about Sierra Hinson, because I feel like she absolutely fits into like the Ergamal category of good international who does what they say on the box and really lifts up a team. Another international who absolutely plays that role is one Serena Bolden, because the Jets are flying. The Jets, as we mentioned, ruined, crashed, poo-pooed Western United's homecoming party, whatever you want to call it, with their 3-1 victory on the weekend. Bolden was right in the thick of the goals. Lauren Allen, as Angela mentioned, scored an absolute beauty. The Jets are looking good, very good actually. But in terms of the ladder, they are currently just sitting outside the top six. They are 3 points behind Western Sydney, who are in six. We know they got the 1-0 win over Perth. So this is probably a little bit of permutations chat, a little bit of ladder chat, because of where we are in the season. We literally only have two full rounds to go and a couple of midweek catch-up games for the teams that have had games postponed for whatever reason. But looking at the ladder, basically everyone north of the Central Coast Mariners in fourth is locked in for finals. So that's Sydney, Western United, Melbourne City and the Mariners. Then you've got Victory in fifth, Western Sydney in sixth, Newcastle in seventh. And I think we've basically confirmed that Perth cannot make finals.
They're the cutoff. I think they might be the cutoff.
Mm.
And that's, it's the classic, you need to win two games and you need to make up some goal difference and you need, you know, mm. they need Western Sydney to blow it as well. Perth can still make it.
Mm.
Yeah, the cutoff point is Perth because Brisbane are on 23 points. They're 7 behind 6th place Western Sydney with 2 games to go. So the cutoff is Perth Glory, but, you know, quite easily you could see a couple of those journeys in this week. So,
who do we think kind of finishes in those final two spots for the 6?
Victory, and I think Victory will clearly be in the 6. I don't see them dropping out. They just got to get a point, and it's locked in from 2 games. I'm actually intrigued. Newcastle Victory, big game this week. The other one, can sort of raffle it, I think, could be the Jets, could be the Wanderers. I don't think it will be Perth Glory, as we just talked about. You know, they actually haven't scored a goal off their own bat in the last 3 games. Both of their 2 goals in previous games for this were own goals. So none of their forwards have actually scored in the last 3 games. Anyway, very random stat. I could easily see it staying pretty similar to what it is. Maybe Victor will jump up to 4th. Like, it's very tight at the top. I think it's more going to be a rearrangement of positions. Western Sydney have a really tough end to things. They host Western United, and then they have to go to Wellington. But as I mentioned, Newcastle have Victory as well. So, yeah. Sort of raffle it between those two for the 6th spot. And to be honest, I think that's a pretty fair reflection of the season. It's, they've sort of built their way in. I think if you looked at it as a whole, maybe Brisbane Roar and Wellington, for different reasons, would look at it as a missed opportunity. Wellington, much like Perth, as we talked about, started fast. The concern was always whether they'd be able to maintain that momentum, and they clearly weren't. And Brisbane, sort of, we know the sort of hectic start to the season they had with the coach sacking and change and all that, and have sort of reasonably hit their straps with Tamika Yelup scoring quite frequently, but it's a little bit of too little too late, and now they're not actually able to make it. So, I think it would be a pretty fair reflection given some of the highlights both the Jets and the Wanderers have shown for them to make it. I quite like the Jets to make it, if I'm being honest, just to keep the Serena Bolden show going. I think she's a big game player. We saw that at the World Cup too, and would thrive and could maybe do a bit of damage. Potential of an F3 derby in the finals as well is pretty tantalising. I think Victory will stay in, and then it's really just a raffle between those two for the last spot.
I'm really bad at math, so I'm just trying to match up the fixtures that we've got coming up with, like, the potential. Like, for example, Sydney Victory, the last game of the season, will be super interesting. And I guess if Western United keep kicking, then that could potentially see, like, influence whether Sydney come first or not on the ladder overall. But yeah, I agree with you, Hara. I think, to be honest, I kind of see Western Sydney being more likely than Newcastle Jets in being able to finish 6th, just because the Jets do have a difficult, so they've got Victory next week, and then do they have Sydney after that? No, that doesn't make sense because it's Sydney Victory last game. Anyway, Jets, I think, just from what I just saw of the upcoming fixtures, have it quite tricky. I just didn't write down the fixture where I was meant to for Newcastle Jets in my little table. Oh, they're playing Adelaide. Actually, now that I see that, you never know. You never know. But to be honest, in terms of just consistency, I think the Jets have been really fun and they would be really, really exciting to see in finals. But my gut feeling is Western Sydney have been a bit more organised, and I think that means that I think they'll be able to kind of just grind out these last 2 games and get the results that they need. But I don't know. You never know. It's looking exciting. And I'm also, either one of those teams, I think, deserve a spot in that top 6. I think they've had really positive seasons. that is my fun. I'm basically copying what Harry said. I agree. I don't think victory will slip out, and I definitely don't think that Perth are showing any signs of having a dramatic bounce back in the last two games of the season to kind of leapfrog anyone here, which is a shame.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. Looking ahead to this weekend's games, we've got a couple of potential, like, final previews. We've got City taking on the Mariners, which I really hope is a fun game. And then a Western Girly Derby with Western Sydney and Western United. So that may well, if Western Sydney can kind of get the win and catch Western United on this downward slide, that might do their finals hopes a world of good. Yeah, it's going to be a very interesting last two rounds of the season. To complete this round, though, we had Brisbane getting a win over Adelaide 2-1, as Harrow mentioned, Tamika Yallop scoring the winner there. We love to see a Tilly scoring. We always love to see a Tilly scoring. And the final game of the round was the Melbourne Derby, Victory and City 0-0. We were speaking a little bit before the start of the pod, and we kind of came to the general consensus. Missed opportunity for both of these sides?
Yeah, absolutely. Victory scored so many goals in the weeks leading up to this. They're on fire. Couldn't find the back of the net. And City, after sort of stabilising, same deal. Yeah, I think it's a missed opportunity, especially in the context of silverware, in the context of top two spots. I think both teams would be pretty, filthy with, not getting a win there. So, yeah, big missed opportunity for both of them. Nice scene in that they sent off Emma Checker, who was playing her last home game. She's retiring at season's end, obviously, to focus on her career outside of football after a really impressive career, one that I think has been held back a lot by injuries, and I imagine would have frustrated her in that sense. But I think a very popular teammate when she's played domestically and internationally and for the Matildas as well, and clearly is getting ready to take that next step. Won a couple of championships as well, one at City, one at Victory, a pretty popular character, as I said. So, yeah, at least it was nice that she got to have that sort of send-off, I think. In consecutive weeks, she was played in Adelaide and then played in Melbourne, so that sort of ticks off her career. Just the Canberra United stint left out of it, I suppose. Very short and sharp. But, yeah, it was nice to see them sort of pay a bit of tribute, but a shame that there wasn't really a result either way. I think we've talked a lot about Victory and City, so they've put a bit of pressure on, both of them have put a bit of pressure on themselves heading into the final fortnight of the season because, as I mentioned, Sydney FC are just rampant at the moment. Western United, like, the way they're slipping a little bit is maybe opening the door for someone else to grab second, but, yeah, it's going to be intriguing.
Yeah, the only team that's, like, vibing at the moment, only teams would be, like, Sydney and Central Coast. And Sydney, because, like, we've talked about, there's just, like, okay, we get it, you're good. And, like, Central Coast not outperformed, but, like, they've secured a spot in finals and kind of outdone expectations I think a lot of people had for a team coming straight into the returning to the comp. So, yeah, Western City, Victory, Sydney, Jets, all probs have anxiety at the moment. And, yeah, it'll make for an interesting final two rounds. Also, did we want to touch on, I think we got some questions about final rules. Did we want to touch on that this week or that? Go over that in a couple of weeks when it's, closer to finals.
I reckon we can mention it now just so people have it in their minds as they're looking at these last 2 weeks of results. Basically, the too long didn't read. You may remember from a couple of months ago, the tie-breaking situation for the A-Leagues was changed, so now goal difference is not the first tiebreaker. Wins are. So if there are two teams equal on points, the first tie-breaking factor is wins, then goal difference, then goals scored, then highest number of points accumulated in games between the two clubs concerned, and then so on and so forth. I will post a link so that people know what I'm talking about. Once we get to finals, though, first and foremost, we must acknowledge that the host of the grand final will be the team that deserves it. That's a win. The thing that we were all shocked to either learn or remember was that the final series this season will obviously include six teams. The first two teams will get a week off, the first week off of finals, and we will have the third place team play off against the sixth place team, and the fourth place team take on the fifth place teams, and these will be elimination finals. So winner takes all, winner progresses through to the next week of finals. We then have two-legged semi-finals, which was the thing that we were all like, oh, okay, cool. So obviously, the team that finishes first will take on the lowest ranked side from those elimination final winners. The second place club will take on the other team. The two highest ranked teams will also get to decide whether they want to play home or away first. And then those two games will be played. The away goals rule will not be in effect for this two-legged semi-finals, which was a boo when we were talking about it before we hit record. And then obviously the highest placed club to advance to the grand final will be considered the home team and get to host that game, which we absolutely love to see. So April is going to be an absolutely fun month with all of these finals and then the grand final taking place on the first weekend of May. So we absolutely can't wait for that to come around, because finals football, it's simply always fun. But shall we move along? No boots this week, which is a nice change of pace, all things considered.
No boots.
We are a fan of Andrew Naboot. Sorry.
I'm glad you said it, because I was thinking it, to be perfectly honest with you. But we had so many how goods. Like, it was a really strong week for how goods. So, Angela, would you like to kick us off with a how good?
Yes, I would. It's funny when we do, like, these records, because sometimes we're like, oh, that was 10 years ago. And this is one of those. But so tickets, pre-sale tickets went out for the Tillies games in May and June against China. So those are going to be in Adelaide and Sydney. And it's very strange to me, because someone asked me if I was like planning to go, and I was just be like, oh, like maybe, I don't know. Gone are the days where I can faff about and decide if I want to do a little interstate trip closer to the time, because people are hustling for tickets now for the Tillies. Like, the World Cup effect is not going away, which is an absolute delight. And I will take this any day of the week, you know, rather than having the luxury of faffing about. Like, the fact that everyone needs to hustle for their tickets is really, really exciting. Anyway, so that was the case for Adelaide. And there was just like, my how good is the man who was interviewed. I think it was by Nine News, one of the big, you know, TV broadcast stations, maybe 10, I don't know. We can post this somewhere, but he was being interviewed by the news crew, and he said, and I quote, "I would never line up for a Broadway show. I would never line up to see the king. I would never line up to see the prime minister, but I am lining up for the Matildas." And just king behavior. We love that. And it's also just the way he says it. He's so regal. We love it. Marissa did a very funny tweet where she like added emojis to really emphasize his tone. So we love that. We love that tickets are going like hotcakes. Is that the phrase? Why did my brain go potato cakes? Because I love potato cakes. That's why. But yeah, make sure if you're going to Sydney, I think there's more tickets going to be released today, which is Monday, the 18th of March. But yeah, for Adelaide, allocations are exhausted. So yeah, just how good to both tickets going so quickly for the Tillys games and also to that man specifically. We love him. Also, just a quick tip for anyone if you've missed out. If you're looking for tickets to a Tillys game and you don't have tickets to a Tillys game, tell everyone that you're looking for tickets to a Tillys game and it will work out because people will keep you front of mind if they have a mate who's selling or they have a spare or whatever it is. Just make sure you put the feelers out there and it will be fine. That is my tip if you did miss out. You'll be okay. You'll get a ticket. Just manifest it by being really annoying about it. Anyway, how good?
Would we like to hear the man? Because I have found the TikTok via 7 News Adelaide.
Please
the,
do.
The only
9, 10, no, 7. Not
all right, here we go.
I would never line up for a Broadway show. I would never line up to see the King. I would never line up to see the Prime Minister. But I am lining up for the Matilda.
I can't, thank God. It's the Matilda.
Matildas.
I love him. And
we love him.
The person that is interviewed right after him is like, not even my year 12 exams were this stressful. And it's like, you know what? Also relatable. So just the good people of Adelaide, I hope you enjoy your Tillys game because you absolutely deserve it. How bloody good. Harrow, how good from you?
Oh, just a little how good in comparison. But how good to see Mary Fowler starting for Man City. And shock horror, doing the thing when she's actually given the chance to. On you, Gareth Taylor. You got there in the end. Yeah, pretty much that's been the situation. I like to think that it was after Tony Gustafsson made it pretty clear that he hoped the form of a Fowler, and I guess probably to a lesser extent your Hayley Raso types, for Australia would actually result in her club taking a better look at her talents and, you know, using her more as a starter rather than from the bench. That's what's happened. We love it. She started against Brighton overnight and she scored and had an assist and was also involved in the build-up for another goal as well. So, yeah, hopefully just the start of many starts for Mary Fowler because she's fantastic. It's great for the Tillys if she's playing regular football and playing a lot of it. And when she's come on and started, she's delivered. So, yeah, Mary Fowler doing the thing. How good?
There are brain cells in that beautiful bonce of Gareth Taylor's. But we move on. I have two Asian Cup-themed how goods. As we kind of alluded to throughout this, the young Tillys won their third-place playoff against South Korea 1-0. It was a Lara Gooch goal simply because she is faster than everyone else on the pitch. She was able to pounce on a long ball, had the deft touch to put it past the South Korean goalkeeper, and the Tillys held out for a third-place finish at the Under-20s Asian Cup. So we absolutely love to see it. They had already confirmed their ticket to the Under-20s World Cup later this year, but a third-place finish is the equal best result by the Under-20s Young Matildas at the Asian Cup, and it equals the result that they did in 2006, when current coach Leah Blaney was playing. So nice little parallels and full circle kind of moments there. So we absolutely love to see any Australian team meddling on podiums, things of that nature. We are manifesting so hard, but it was just awesome to see. It was a really impressive tournament for a lot of these players. And the best part is that a lot of them are just going to slip right back into their A-League women's clubs because so many of them are starters and stars for their dub teams. So the young Tillys, a huge congratulations and a huge how good. And the Asian Cup good times are going to roll on because the Asian Football Confederation has all but confirmed they have decided that Australia is their preferred bid for the women's 2026 Asian Cup. So that is so exciting that we will once again have a major tournament on our shores. Obviously, not the same scale or size as the World Cup, but the Asian Cup is such an important tournament. And it's just going to be so good that we have another opportunity to watch the Matildas in a major tournament on home soil. So we'll obviously wait for official confirmation with that and then find out things about host cities and all of that kind of stuff. But it's just so, so exciting that we get to see another major tournament on home soil. We get another opportunity to watch the Tillies play. It's a big bloody how good. There is one final, I don't even know if we can call it a how good, but it is a funny. Angela, would you like to share this one with the listeners?
Well, yeah. So we were talking about this pre-pod, and some people might say this is a boot, but personally, I'm, you know, allowing, I'm giving grace to whoever was responsible to this situation, because I'm a community sports volunteer who coordinates soccer players and soccer teams and other, you know. So the how good is, because it's funny, is Arsenal rocking up to play Chelsea and forgetting their away socks, their clash socks. And I think also a how good to the innovative solution that was, you know, drummed up once this was realised, with Arsenal purchasing a lot of socks from the Chelsea shop, basically, and then covering up the Chelsea branding on the socks with tape. I just think it's like the pros do it too. And there's been a couple of situations in the A-League this season as well where there's been, you know, forgotten kits or whatever. And I think, you know, it's just, it's validating for me personally to be like, well, it happens everywhere. We all forget things. We're all busy. There's a lot of chaos that goes into running a football club, whether it be Chelsea or, you know, a soccer club in Victoria. So how good to that, and how good to the people on the ground who got it done. And yeah, I hope that whoever was responsible did not get in too much trouble, because, you know, these things happen, all right? It's okay. So yeah, a how good to forgetting socks and then coming up with solutions. Harrow, you said that you had a situation last season where that happened.
Yeah, it was either last season or the season before. Team rocked up with the same coloured socks, so lent them the white ones.
Yeah.
Lucky them. What yeah. a treat.
We should have sold them.
I'll just say, a hell of a lot cheaper than going to the Chelsea store to buy socks. I can't imagine they were, you know, there was no bulk pack. There was no bulk buy with a discount or something.
The people at Ultra Football know me by sight now. I think they have like a picture behind the counter, because I always go in when they have socks on special, and I'm like, I will get 100 of the red ones. And they're like, why do you need? And I'm like, don't ask. Just give me the discount. Anyway, sorry.
Also, while you were saying, oh, some people might think this is a boot, I wanted to interrupt you and say, Arsenal fans think this is a boot. Chelsea fans do not think this is a boot. Neutral fans do not think this is a boot.
Need to chill a little bit. Sorry. I'm going to inflame Arsenal fans by saying that, which proves my point. Anyway.
Anywho, yeah, it was deeply funny, but obviously not for Arsenal. They ended up losing 3-1. So, rip. Anyway, that is us done for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. We have had a lot of fun. We will catch you all next week. But as always, we're over on espn.com.au and the ESPN app. You can find us on Spotify, Apple, all of the usual pod spots. If you like what we do, leave a review and subscribe. If you want to chat to us, if you want to ask us some questions, we are at The Far Post Pod on all social media. But until next time, see ya!